Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 7th day of August, 2020. It's a Friday. Mercifully, Friday has arrived, and we could all use a little Friday in our lives, couldn't we? I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, downloading, subscribing, rating and reviewing on iTunes, all that. Going to the Patreon site, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast, and chipping in a little to the till there, and you'll be rewarded. You'll be rewarded with a special show every Saturday at 12:01 Eastern Time, I think. I schedule it for then. And I was trying to remember if I could do it on that. But since I figured it out, the Curse Show, the Week in Effin' Review, will be posted at 12:01 tonight. And you get to really hear some of... I hope I'm giving your inner rage voice so you can crank it up like it was a Led Zeppelin tune and you're driving on an open road. Maybe not. You probably shouldn't listen to my voice at high volumes. But still, you can listen to it in double time, and it sounds like an angry Smurf inhaling helium. Whatever floats your boat. It's patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. All one word there. We got a big action-packed show for you today. Fear not. I did not let you down. I wasn't going to let you down anyway. But we have a special, it's the Friday interview edition, even though that's kind of a novelty now, because I used to have to do videos on Fridays, and now I don't have to do videos anymore, although maybe I should. People say, you should put stuff on YouTube, but I don't know. Nobody wants to look at me. The guests, if I could just, you know, have a shot of the guests, I'd be fine with that. And today's guest is no exception. Today's guest is Dr. Deborah So. She has a new book, The End of Gender, Debunking the Myths About Sex and Identity in Our Society, out now, highly recommended. The topic is all over the news. Transgender this, there's 600 trillion different genders, and you can make one up and everybody has to accept it. Well, there are real-world impacts on life, on human beings, and damage being done to science as well, and the concept of science. It is all in the name of political correctness, not wanting to hurt people's feelings, whatever it is. We get into the whole thing with Dr. Deborah So coming up later on in the show, so be ready for that. You'll like it, and it'll cut my horrible voice, so there you go. But first, I got to tell you about AncientLifeOil.com before we get to Joe Biden's racism. Good God, he's the machine that keeps on giving. He's the jukebox that is broken and doesn't need quarters anymore, or dollars, or whatever the hell, your credit card swipe. But AncientLifeOil.com, Joe could use some CBD oil. CBD oil will help clear your mind. It'll help settle your mind. It'll help you sleep, help you rest, help you relax, help you with aches and pains. It really is a bit of a miracle. Google for yourself. Look up CBD oil benefits, and you'll see all these things that you're not going to believe. I'm not going to blame you for not believing it. But then look at the reviews. Look what people are saying. Talk to your friends and your family. Look what they're saying, and you'll go, "This, they can't all be lying, can they?" And they're not. Then you go to AncientLifeOil.com, where you want to get the best 100% organic CBD oil available. And you pick that up, throw it in your cart, you enter promo code Derek, my name, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. Click apply, you get free fast shipping on top of everything else. You can't beat the deal. You can't beat the product. And I am a convert. I am a true believer in CBD oil now. Every morning when I sit down to do my radio show, I have my CBD on my desk and I put the squirt of the dropper under my tongue and I'm good to go. That eye strain is a thing of the past. All right, ancientlifeoil.com. Don't forget promo code Derek at checkout. Lets them know where you heard it, and it gets you free shipping. Okay, Joe Biden, you feel bad for sniffy, creepy, gropey, huggy, finger bang Joe, don't you? I mean, a little bit. At some point, watching him campaign really is like watching that surveillance footage from an episode of 2020 where they go, we go deep into the nursing home abuse that's going on across the country. Hidden camera footage exposes what's going on, because that's what he's going through. He's experiencing elder abuse in the name of a power grab by a political party, the Democratic Party. Now, think back to yourself, and there were 722 different Democrats running for president, and they settled on this one. Like, they had every, it's like going into a Baskin Robbins. So you got 31 flavors. No, you really got 107 flavors. Oh, it's so exciting. I'll have the vanilla. But do you have a vanilla where the vanilla flavor is not particularly noticeable? Do you have anything that, could you just maybe put milk in an ice cube tray and freeze it, put it on a stick and give it to me? I don't like flavor. I just want plain old bland flavor. That's what Joe Biden is. He's the worst ice cream in the world. And Democrats chose him, which lets you know, like, the rest of the field, his vice presidential pick may well be Kamala Harris, who also came out of that field. And everybody looked at Kamala Harris on stage next to Joe Biden and said, we'd rather have him. And they're thinking, yeah, she'd be a great running mate. Who the hell looks at Kamala Harris after losing, not even making it to the first primary or the first caucus in Iowa, and go, yeah, you know what? We rejected her so far out of hand that she didn't. I think she dropped out in November. She's the one to bring excitement to the ticket. She couldn't bring excitement to her own ticket, but they've got it. So if Joe Biden is their choice, think about the rejects and look back in awe that one party with so many people in it, so diverse, they tell us. They love diversity over there, except of thought. So diverse that they ended up with the oldest, whitest guy on the planet who is not all there. We all remember about 6-8 weeks ago when Joe Biden had an interview with Charlemagne the God, where at the end he made what he probably thought was a cute joke based in truth, that if you don't vote for me, then if you don't know if you're going to vote for me or the other guy, then you ain't black. Ha ha, get it? And he caught hell for that. Now, a normal person would look at that and go, well, I should probably, you know, Joe Biden's been in politics since the early 70s, actually before that. Joe Biden's been in politics since before I've been alive, and he steps in it constantly. You would think that as somebody who stepped in it so badly that he had to issue an apology over his statement there would be hypersensitive and at a minimum be cognizant of the way that politics has changed over the course of his 50 years in it, that he should not, if you can't control yourself and if you don't know what's going to offend people and people are ready to be offended at a moment's notice, then you at least write yourself a mental note and you say, you stay away from these issues. All right, stay away from analogies, stay away from this. Don't bring it up unnecessarily. You can't run away from it if you're asked about it. But if almost every single time you open your mouth talking about black Americans, you step in a steaming pile of crap, you probably wouldn't voluntarily bring up black Americans, especially when there's no reference for it, there's no need for it in a conversation. But Joe Biden isn't all there. Joe Biden probably doesn't remember his conversation with Charlemagne the God. He probably just thinks of Charlemagne the Emperor and doesn't, well, when did they change his name to God? Are they rewriting history books about that? So he's doing an interview, and it's a testament to just how bad he is and how bad his statement was yesterday that this didn't get noticed until this, the next day. What he said yesterday, of course, was about Donald Trump and God, there's so many Biden gaffes, it's hard to keep up with. He was asked about Donald Trump's cognitive tests and whether or not he'd taken any cognitive tests. No, I hadn't. And I bleep, blop, and he goes on from there, falls off the rails. That was so bad that something even worse didn't get noticed until yesterday. Let's listen to Joe Biden essentially say, well, not essentially. He says that black people, there's no diversity there of thought. They're the Borg. Those pesky Hispanics, however, still hold out that idea that they should be able to think for themselves as individuals, at least far too many of them for his liking, or so he says. Listen to Joe.
Yes, and by the way, what you all know, but most people don't know, unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community with incredibly different attitudes about different things.
Black people all think alike, which is just this side of black people all look alike, which is, I think, universally condemned and rightly so as racist, because it's not true and it's an old racist trope. But there's Joe. Look, as you know, there's not a lot of diversity amongst blacks. They're all just are dumb and vote Democrat, and we don't have to worry about them. I don't have to even really pretend to care about their vote. Like I said, if they ain't vote for me, they ain't really black. I love the notable exceptions, like Condoleezza Rice and Clarence Thomas and Thomas Sowell and other people who just don't know that they should shut the hell up and conform. Unlike them, the Hispanics are wily, man. They won't be corralled into straight up groupthink based on their ethnicity, not for lack of trying from Democrats, but, you know, we're working on it. We're working on it. So when I heard that, my jaw hit the floor. Like, holy shit, he just said that, didn't he? He really did just say that. Unprovoked. I'm like, I just had the clip and I thought, okay, 14 seconds. Played it on the radio, commented on it. Then after the show, because it's hard to gather audio while you're doing a show. You have to silence all your computers and everything, and you're afraid. You got to try and find the whole clip. So then after the show and before recording this podcast, obviously, since I'm about to play it, I thought maybe there's greater context to this that upon hearing makes more sense. It makes it at least not as bad. And I found the clip. I found the whole clip. And I found the whole context. And I'll play it for you so as to leave no ambiguity about what he said. And I can tell you that it doesn't get any better. It really doesn't. There is literally no reason whatsoever for Joe Biden to say what he said. It wasn't like we're talking about black people this and black people that and Hispanic people. No, they were talking specifically about Hispanics. He threw in black people for reasons known only to Joe and the slowly dying hamster running around in the wheel in behind his ears or between his ears and behind his eyes, his vacant, ever more vacant eyes. So I want you to hear it. It's about 2 minutes long, just so there's no ambiguity. This is several hours later after the clip first started circulating. And to my amazement, at least as of this recording, the Democratic establishment, meaning all of the Democratic Party, the elected Democrats, and the entirety of the media, they've yet to come up with a valid, decent response to try and polish this turd. Because you know they're working overtime. They're all out there going, how can we justify it? How can we explain it? What can we say he was talking about? What can we say that he meant to say? Anything, something like that. Just give us some kind of context. What we really need is a distraction. Set something on fire, do whatever it is, and then we can wait until the next story that the media will glom onto, and we can all exhale and go, another bullet dodged, they've moved on. they haven't come up with that. Even New York Times reporters are tweeting about how this is an unforced gaffe. They're calling it a gaffe. This is some racist shit right here. I mean, make no mistake about it. This is racist. And if it were Donald Trump who said anything remotely close to this, they would be going through the roof of, oh my God, the White House has turned into the Klan house. There's nothing but it's just horrible. What an awful racist he is. If any Republican had said this, they would be saying that. They're calling it a gaffe is the best they can come up with to soft pedal Joe Biden's racism. It tells you how bad it was. So they're going to do their best to move on. They're going to, because until they can come up with a way to go, but it's not really what he meant. What he meant to say was X, Y, or Z. So when they try that, you have the entirety of the context. I give you now the entirety of the context.
I have a few questions that I'd just like to get through because they are incredibly important to the Latino community. First of all, you are extending TPS, temporary protected status, to Venezuelans. Cubans, though, are now being deported in unprecedented numbers. Would you stop those deportations?
What I said, I'm going to look at entire temporary. I'm going to look at every single country in the world that in fact is being, and this guy's sending them back. The reason why I came up with Venezuela is he's not even allowing it to exist in the first place. And so the TPS program is something I will move on the first day I'm in office to make sure that we extend it to people. We didn't get it right. But here's the deal. I think that we should be extending it. Anybody can prove that they are in jeopardy to go back to their country and the reason they came in the first place, they should be able to stay in the United States of America until the circumstance changes in their country. And that's why, by the way, I put that program together to provide. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Are you going to reengage with Cuba, though? I mean, I'm specifically wondering about, you know, the Florida communities that are, incredibly interested in the Cuba issue and see status given to Venezuelans while Cubans are being deported.
The answer is yes, I'm going to engage. Yes. And by the way, what you all know, but most people don't know, unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community with incredibly different attitudes about different things. You go to Florida, you find a very different attitude about immigration in certain places than you do when you're in Arizona. So it's a very diverse community.
Those blacks, they're all one thing like the Borg. They don't have any original thought. They don't question anything. I like that. Those pesky Hispanics, they have their own opinions about things, and it really depends on the individual, and it's kind of gross, and it freaks me out. I like my minorities to be of uniform in thought. Yeah, so there's the whole context. What's good about that? Is it better? Because I like to give the whole context, because there's always the argument, well, you've taken that wildly out of context. There is no wildly out of context there. They weren't talking about black people. They were talking about Hispanic voters. They were talking about immigration. And he just said, well, it just occurred to me. Black people, well, they do what they're told. The rest of the other minorities, they're kind of all over the place. I don't like that. It scares me. They haven't thought of a way to really polish that turd, not an effective way. And they can't because, well, it is in fact a turd, a giant steaming turd. And I feel a little bit of sympathy, not much, because I mostly feel joy, but I feel a little bit of sympathy for the Biden staff. Because they have to deal with this. This is like dealing with a child. Big news in the Hunter household this week, by the way. Quinn is now sleeping in a big girl bed, as she calls it, which means we took the side off of her crib so she can crawl in and out of it because she'd started climbing out of the crib. And it's this transition to being, she was very afraid last night when I put her to bed, crying. I had to read her a story. I had to reassure her. I had to show her, now look, the cats can jump up there with you and everything. And then she was okay and able to fall asleep, but she was paranoid about falling out of the bed or whatever. She demanded I put the side back on the bed. And I don't know, maybe she just likes climbing over it. Who can figure out kids? But she looking at Joe Biden and dealing with Joe Biden is like that. You have this self-destructive person who doesn't realize they're being self-destructive, who doesn't realize they're saying bad things. Quinn didn't realize that when she's climbing over the railing of the crib on a hardwood floor that we might not like that, that it might not be the best thing to do. That could, you know, you'd fall and get hurt. That's the job of a parent. In a lot of ways, with Joe Biden, his staff is doing the job of a parent. You have to sit there and say, oh God, here he goes. Because I was doing radio yesterday. And so I'm looking on my phone and I see Quinn climbing over the railing before I took the side off. And it's like, oh shit, just don't fall. Just don't fall. She didn't fall. She climbed over it like a champ. Better than I probably could. And got out and just walked around, walked into the other bedroom to visit her sister, Bailey, and walked around until my wife got up there and took care of them. Watching Joe Biden give an interview for his staff has to be a lot like that, going, don't fall. Oh, God. Oh, please. Oh, shit. Where's he going with this? What's going on? It's like watching a security or nanny cam of your baby monitor of your kid. Like, oh geez, don't do that. Don't put that in your mouth. Don't do this. And that's all Joe Biden is. And your whole life is spent trying to avoid that. This is why the Biden campaign likes to put out canned, edited speeches or interviews that they control, campaign events that they control. Because when they go live, Joe Biden can say anything. He's like a mystery firework. Somebody peeled off the label. All you know is there's a wick and a whole bunch of tubes. You don't know what it does, but you light it and you just run away from it to see what it does. That's kind of like what it has to be like working for Joe Biden, because you never know where he's going to go. The video that they released the other day of him sitting around with his Corvette. Turns out it's his Corvette. I didn't know it was his Corvette. But somebody called into my radio show and said, no, that's his Corvette. Nice looking car, Joe. Got a nice car. Wonder where you got the money for that. But he's sitting behind the wheel. First of all, he's weirdly driving it with a mask on, or sitting in it with a mask on when he's the only one around. Like, you can take the mask off. But he's sitting behind the wheel and he's grabbing the steering wheel and he says, the thing I like best about this is this right here. And he doesn't say the steering wheel. He just kind of looks at it, pauses for a second, says, this whole setup, it really makes you feel like you're in charge of this, like you're in control of this whole thing. And I thought to myself, you're behind the wheel of a car. You damn well better be in control of the whole damn thing. Then I started to worry and wonder, like, does Joe Biden ever go out? And Joe Biden doesn't drive himself, I imagine. But if Joe Biden out on the road and like, oh, wow, I like the way this handles. It makes me feel like I'm in control of this 2,000-pound piece of machinery I'm propelling down the street at a high rate of speed. Like, yeah, well, you damn well better feel like you're in charge of that thing, because otherwise you're going to kill somebody. Joe, you might want to pay attention to the road. And that was edited. You know, they put that package together to try and show that Joe's Mr. Cool. And they put it out and they thought, well, all right, now we're starting to appeal to gearheads. We're starting to appeal to car people. We're starting to appeal to the youth. This is great. Way to go, Joe. And then the next day, he steps in a steaming pile of dog crap, fresh from the tap of him saying, look, black people all think alike. Black people don't know how to think for themselves, and that's the way I like them. These Hispanics, they get all uppity, what with their own opinions on various issues, whereas you don't have that in the black community, with rare exception. Except, you know, because I've been that staffer, and you sit off camera and you just kind of go, oh, God damn it, dude. And that hours later, they still haven't come up with a good excuse for it or what he meant to say, let you know just how bad it was for Joe. Joe is his own worst enemy, and he's the best thing we got going for us right now is that the Democrats decided to pick Joe Biden. It's like Hillary Clinton all over again, only with less testosterone. The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you, my friends. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure that the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. So be sure to enter soon, because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you have to do is text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. That's right. Again, it's just Derek, D-E-R-E-K, to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. Paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. How cool would it be to win a signed piece of swag from the President of the United States? That'd be pretty cool. Okay, speaking of pretty cool, we go now to the interview. Dr. Deborah So, I've seen her on various things. She seems super cool. She's Canadian, although you won't pick that up in the accent, really. Sounds a lot like me, except for when she, beforehand, we were talking, and she said, sorry. And I was like, oh, yes, that's right. She is full-blown Canadian. I'm only partially, I'm Canadian adjacent because I grew up near Canada, played hockey in Canada. But anyway, it's a great interview about a very interesting and wildly important topic. And it's going to be a topic for a very long time. So the more you arm yourself and the sooner you arm yourself with facts about the issue, the better off you'll be, and you'll be able to navigate the minefield going forward, where she's not afraid to say the things that are politically incorrect or verboten in science. Now, science, who'd have thought science is having things declared out of bounds? So I'll be back at the end of the interview to wrap it up. So without any further ado, the end of gender with Dr. Deborah So.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, as we've been promising, and I've been teasing throughout the first part of the show, we're joined now by Dr. Deborah So. She's the author of the new book, The End of Gender, Debunking the Myths About Sex and Identity in Our Society, available now wherever fine books are sold or online, even where bad books are sold. Dr. So, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Congratulations on the book. This is one of those books that, you know, it's perfect timing in a sense. To come out now, and you get lucky on these things. It's an important topic, but it being in the news constantly is a rarity and reaching sort of an apex. First of all, tell me, why did you decide to write this book?
My biggest motivator for writing The End of Gender was the questions that I've received over the last few years from people who read my work and seen my media appearances, people asking me about just very basic facts about gender and not understanding, you know, where all these really strange, confusing ideas about gender are coming from. Because I think a lot of what we're being told by, you know, journalists and media more broadly and the government and scientific organizations, medical organizations, there's a lot of misinformation out there. So with the book, each chapter is a different myth, and maybe we can go through the different myths. I offer a science-based approach to debunking these myths, and I think this misinformation, no matter how well-intentioned it may be, is ultimately going to be very harmful for society if it's not corrected.
Well, let's talk, because a science-based approach makes perfect sense unless you're aware of what's going on in the world. And science is no longer science. When I was a kid taking, you know, science in high school and science in college, it was, can you prove it? Prove it. Can you prove it? Question everything. Questioning was the most important thing about science. But when it comes to something like gender or anything that falls, I'd say, on the political left in general, in the sweet spot of what they think they can exploit, there are certain things that you can't question anymore, which is the antithesis of science. It wasn't always that way, though. There was actual science around gender. Gender dysphoria was a real thing that people were diagnosed as having. Now, if somebody declares themselves a tomato sexual, and they just made it up, you're supposed to go, okay, well, then there you go. You're tomato sexual. Congratulations. Fried green or full ripe. When did the science become, politicized or confused or hijacked or whatever the preferred term is?
It's been a gradual process, I would say. I think within the last probably 5 years, it's gotten really bad. As a former sex researcher, the field of sex research predominantly would be facing impedance from the political right historically. And that's not to say that all right-leaning people have a problem with sex research.
Right, but it's the uptight Bible thumper stereotype that, people think of when they hear opposition to sex researcher.
Right. And I think also because sex researchers are predominantly left-leaning, and I still would consider myself to be a liberal. I'm definitely not far left or extreme left. But in the last 5 years, I had noticed now we're seeing a lot more interference coming from the political left. And I think because the field is predominantly filled with people who are similarly left-leaning, it's more difficult for them to ascertain, you know, what is the problem? How do we call this out? And I think in some ways, researchers don't see it as much of a problem because it is people on the same side. But because of that, that's why it's become such a huge problem. And I think even in the last year or two, I'm very concerned because I'm seeing now any paper that tries to get published that counters particular narratives around gender, and especially gender dysphoria, they're getting placed under review a second time. So with the scientific method and in terms of publishing scientific papers, usually a paper will be peer reviewed. So that means it's going to be looked at by other experts in the field. They will give feedback to the author or authors, and they will have to amend the paper in whatever way to make sure that it's suitable before it gets published. And so now what we're seeing is papers that come out that counter any sort of aspect of trans activism or orthodoxy will be placed under review a second time, purely because the findings were deemed politically incorrect or upsetting to activists. And in some cases, the papers will actually be retracted. So it's really a terrifying time that scientific papers themselves can't even be trusted now, because what we see is some scientists have chosen to take up the activist cause. And I do have a chapter in the book dedicated to this, discussing about how activism and social justice is destroying academia and the field of sexology, which is my former field, which is the scientific study of sex and gender. So now new papers that come out pretty much toe the activist line. You know that there's not going to be anything in that's going to upset particular groups. And at the end of the day, that also means that a lot of this information may not be factually accurate.
In the scientific world, the scientific method is wildly important. You present your findings, and then people who know something about the field look at it and say, I'm sure you added this right, or I'm not sure you calculated this right. You solved for X or this wrong. And they it's like double checking your work. It's like an editor before you hit publish. And it's very important because they do catch a lot of mistakes. But now it seems like what you described right there is what we're seeing happen in the world of journalism, for example, where there is no straight newspaper anymore. There's the Washington Post and the New York Times on the left. There's the Washington Free Beacon and Examiner on the right. And they live in different worlds, draw different conclusions from the same event. That's okay when you're doing news because you can read both and find the truth in the middle there for yourself, or go to primary sources. But when it comes to science, is there that bifurcation? Are there journals out there that are refusing to bow to the political wills of the moment and whims of the moment that are sort of being otherized by the establishment in science?
No, this is the sad thing. No? I would say the even
so there's no outlet otherwise. It's you're in or you're out.
Basically, I mean, there was one example last year, and I wrote about this in the book. There was a paper that was published. So this particular journal is the official journal of the largest organizational body of neuroscientists. And they had a series that they were publishing saying they wanted to spark debate, you know, intellectual challenge, which I think is the whole point of being in academia and the whole point of being a scientist. And they published this paper that suggested that for some people with gender dysphoria, and I should say I do support transitioning in adults. I think, well, number one, research has shown that transitioning can benefit adults with gender dysphoria. I'm very critical of gender transitioning children, and maybe we can talk a bit about that as well. But so this paper was saying that for people with gender dysphoria, maybe the reason they feel that way is not necessarily because they have the wrong brain sex in their body, which is the common narrative, but that maybe there are differences in sensory networks. And in that way, maybe therapy could potentially help people feel more comfortable in their bodies. So that was one possibility, right? I don't think that's the case for everyone with gender dysphoria, but this was meant to be, again, intellectually stimulating. The purpose of publishing this paper was to encourage debate around this issue. And because activists and other so-called experts got very upset and there was a lot of backlash, this paper was placed under review and then it was finally retracted. So we also see other really nonsensical ideas, like talking about how gender is non-binary. This has been published in some of the most prestigious academic journals, medical journals in the world. So, I mean, I'm racking my brain right now trying to think if there's any journals that I don't see anyone really pushing back now. There have been slight attempts, as I mentioned, I think in the last year, but each time, no, it just seems like everyone is capitulating now.
It's a scary, scary thing. You talk about gender that's non-binary. There really are only two. It's an innie or an outie, to put it in third grade terms. But what you do with it and what you feel on the inside are two different things. And there's people say, well, there's difference. There's gender. There's gender identity. There's they create all these subcategories to create a world that they want to inhabit. I don't doubt that some people have, I don't know, gender dysphoria issues, whatever it is. But we're seeing such an uptick in it, at least in the attention that it's getting, that it almost seems fashionable. Am I just being horribly, wildly insensitive in thinking that some people just go, oh, my 2-year-old is transgender? You mentioned transitioning children and giving hormones to prevent puberty, which is wildly inappropriate, in my opinion. But are we reaching the point where it's transgender is the new black, for lack of a better word, where some people just go for it because they're seeking external validation for who they are as a person, and they think this is just a way to do it. It's fashionable.
I would say, so for people who are experiencing issues with their gender, I do think it's important to have compassion and to understand that they probably are really suffering and trying to figure themselves out. At the same time, I do think that gender has become trendy to some extent. So previously, when people, especially children and adolescents, are trying to figure themselves out, they go through phases, whether it's maybe being punk or being goth in the past, but now it's about gender and figuring out your gender identity. And especially as you're saying, there are children now being referred to gender clinics as young as age 3. That's not an exaggeration. A three-year-old has no idea what they're saying. And especially when it comes to something like gender, some of the determinants in terms of what clinicians consider to be gender dysphoria now is if a child decides that they want to wear the opposite sex clothing, or if say a little, so a child who's born male wants to put barrettes in his hair or her hair. It's just, it's so far, it's almost as though, I don't know where common sense is. I mean, that's such a basic thing to say, but it's completely nonsensical now. And I think, I don't understand why the adults in the room are not saying, this is, you know, it's fine if you want to figure yourself out. And I do think that's fine to experiment. But when we start talking about medical interventions, and some of them have potentially irreversible effects, this is not something that should be taken lightly.
No. And as somebody who went through a punk goth stage that I still haven't technically grown out of, it's mm-hmm. good to get out there. Not everybody can listen to Bon Jovi nonstop. You mentioned earlier that there, in gender dysphoria, there is possible treatment. Gender dysphoria is real, and there's possible treatment for it, and it's short of transitioning. If people want to transition, it's your body. I don't care what you do with it, as long as you're an adult. I couldn't care less. It's just that I'm being made to care, that I have a problem with it, or made to pay for it as well. But there are people who, the deaf community, which is weird to throw a community on the end of that, but that's the way people talk now. The deaf community, when somebody gets a cochlear implant and can hear for the first time, there's a weird sense of betrayal portrayed at some most extreme measures. So if you can now hear, you've now left our group and you are part of the enemy or opposition or whatever. Is there that kind of pressure in transgender existence where, if you don't transition, but instead you seek some sort of treatment, maybe a prescription or therapy or whatever, to treat gender dysphoria, that you're betraying your own kind?
I do see some sentiments of that. I think that's part of a larger theme we have in our culture now of people seeking status through being a victim or through being oppressed or through a lack of so-called privilege, where I do see in some conversations, people who have transitioned are considered to now have privilege because they had the resources or the means to seek medical transitioning. And I think at the end of the day, no matter what community is, whether it's a trans community or, as you mentioned, it's people getting cochlear implants, there's always going to be a group of people who just want to try and seize attention or seize some form of way of making themselves feel better by attacking other people, even if it is other people in their community with whom they probably do share a number of commonalities. I just think it's a really unfortunate state of affairs that we're in right now, that this is what we're seeing and that people are actually being rewarded for this kind of behavior.
We're not even allowed to have a conversation about this. And that's the biggest shame, I think, Dr. So, is that you used to be able to talk about anything. There were certain things you didn't talk about in polite society or what have you. But as a free people, the ability to speak about things and disagree about things and still go about your business is fundamentally human, if not American, but you're Canadian, so I'm broadening it to human. But in this topic, you're not allowed to have these discussions. Why is it that this is so? Is it because sex, gender, whatever is so personal to the individual? Or is it because it's taboo? Or is there something else at work that just says we don't want to have any discussion on this? I've declared my pronouns. Accept it, whether you like it or not. Embrace it, whether you are comfortable with it or not. And don't ever talk about it or question it.
I think part of the sentiment is coming from, so myself, I grew up in the gay community. I'm a straight woman, but growing up, you know, all my friends were gay. And I would see the discrimination that they faced in society. I do think things have gotten better since then, but there is still homophobia. And I think people recognize that mistakes were made and that it was wrong to have discriminated against gay people. And so now they're going so far in the complete opposite direction when it comes to gender or any sort of aspect of self-identification, because they feel like this is the right thing to do. And I think there are also people who may be critical of this, but because they're being told that this is the right thing to do, or maybe they feel that they don't really have a dog in the fight, so why would they go against this if this is what is going to help us move forward as a society? I think these are all factors leading to why it's gone so far to this other extreme now, where it's pretty much anything goes, and if you question that, that's seen as hateful.
What would you say is the biggest misconception about the way gender is sort of liquidly defined now?
The biggest one, I would say it started with gender being a social construct, which is not true, but that was where this conversation, I think, originated. And then from there, it stretched now to gender being a spectrum. And gender being something that you can choose. I see this all over the place now, that there are infinite genders and that you can pick whichever one you are. And now it's also stretched to encapsulate biological sex, that biological sex is a spectrum and that it's socially constructed, which is a very odd thing for people to say, because I don't know how that would be physically possible. So those would probably be the main ones, but there's just so much out there. I feel like you said, it's in the news every day almost, and people are constantly sending me screenshots and things from their work and things in their kids' education curriculum. And I appreciate all that, because it's mind-boggling the extent to which these ideas have spread. And I really think that you really cannot, it's impossible not to encounter this in your day-to-day life, no matter what line of work you're in. No matter what your hobbies are, it's going to be there. It's just a question of how much you're paying attention to it.
I wish everybody well, and I wish everybody was happy and so on and so forth and prosperous and went on and did whatever they wanted to do. But as a father of two young girls, they're not exposed to this yet. They wouldn't know what to do with it if they did. But at some point, they will be in school somewhere, and they will be exposed to this. Everybody's concerned about the people who are suffering from gender, or have gender dysphoria. I don't know if you're allowed to say suffering with it. Have gender dysphoria, and we see drag queen reading times and things like that all over the place. But is there an impact on just kids in general? Because a 5-6-year-old, again, doesn't have a concept of gender or concerns about it. really, but they're being exposed younger and younger and younger to things that, even to an adolescent mind, I got to imagine, don't make a whole lot of sense.
It can be very confusing for children. I think on some level, the educators who are pushing these ideas into the curriculum and teaching children these things at such young ages, on some level, they are aware of what they're doing because children don't know any better. And I have parents who tell me things like their kids are being taught that there's no such thing as boys and girls, that, again, you can pick whichever gender you are. Some curriculum I've seen, their gender, again, social construct, it's a spectrum. Gender is due to stereotypical gender norms, and that there are people who identify as both genders or neither. Another common myth is that sexual orientation, gender identity, and anatomy and gender expression, all these things have nothing to do with each other. And I guess it would help for me to define the different terms. So biological sex, again, is male or female. It's dependent on whether you produce eggs or sperm. And then gender identity refers to how you feel, whether you feel masculine or feminine. Gender expression is the expression of whether you feel masculine or feminine through the way you dress, the way you carry yourself, your behavior, mannerisms, things like that. So I really don't think we have to be teaching children these completely nutty ideas to encourage acceptance in society for people who are different, for people who are gender nonconforming. I think it's really dangerous, actually, the way that this is currently being promoted.
Yeah, it's confusing for adults. So there's no way a kid could possibly understand it. One of the things you have is the last 10 years, the number of people identifying as transgender has doubled. Now it's from 3 to 6 out of 1,000. So I always say that, you know, if you control the unit of measure, you can control the world. If you say a 100% increase, it sounds, oh my God, it's huge. But 3 to 6 out of 1,000, it gives it perspective, but still that's a statistically significant jump. Why are more young people who are born female coming out as transgender, do you think?
There are a number of reasons that are not being discussed when it comes to particularly why young women, so mostly adolescent girls and women in their, say, early 20s, are coming out as trans men and also coming out now as non-binary. And a lot of the, when you actually sit down and talk to these young women, so detransitioners are people who have transitioned to the opposite sex and then returned to their birth sex. So in this case, these individuals born female, identify as male, and then some of them will undergo hormonal and potentially surgical interventions and then decide they made a mistake and want to return to living as female. When you talk to them, there are so many other things going on in their life that led them to feel gender dysphoric. And these are things that are not being talked about more widely. So some of these things include, so the phenomenon is in the literature is called rapid onset gender dysphoria. And for many of these young women, they have either autism, they have a history of sexual trauma, they often will have self-harm. I'm trying to think of what other issues, or, you know, just growing up is difficult. That's just the reality of it. And so now they're being told, if you feel any sort of discomfort around your body, which I think is very normal after going through puberty, or being a woman, and as much as I've been critical of feminist dogma in the past, I do think sexism does exist to some level in society. I don't think it's so terrible that women, especially young women, can't go after what they want in life. But you know, I think for some of these individuals, they have a negative experience and they think, well, I don't want to be a woman then, so why not become a man, potentially, because that will be easier. And especially with the non-binary movement, I would be fine with young people wanting to try on all these different identities and see how they feel about it, if it didn't also incorporate irreversible surgeries like double mastectomies, where in some cases young women as young as age 12 are getting these surgeries. And I'm just appalled because I don't think this is going to end well. I think even if we fast forward a couple of years, even, I don't think it's going to look very good.
The medical community can't think, you know, like the medical community cannot think that body altering, life altering, hormonal treatment or surgery is good on somebody who hasn't finished puberty, who hasn't finished childhood yet. Why are they silent or complicit?
They're afraid because they face a very real risk of having their livelihoods ruined, having their personal reputations ruined if they speak up about this or go against it. And we have conversion therapy laws that are in place, I believe, in the U.S. in 20 states. Here in Canada, we actually have a bill that is currently seeking to be passed that actually will put someone in prison for 5 years if they, up to 5 years, I believe it is, if they practice so-called conversion therapy for gender identity. So I want to clarify, because conversion therapy for sexual orientation is not helpful. I don't support it. It doesn't work. It's unethical, because you cannot change a person's sexual orientation, because sexual orientation is biological. But gender identity, especially in young children, is flexible. So a child who says that they are the opposite sex with age and development can grow to be comfortable in their birth sex, as is shown in the research literature that shows that the vast majority of kids with gender dysphoria outgrow their feelings by puberty, and they're more likely to grow up to be gay adults. So it's not appropriate to call any sort of therapy that seeks to understand these factors and to see whether a child may grow comfortable in their birth sex, because I would say that would be a, I mean, this is controversial to say, but I would argue that's a better outcome for these children, so that they won't have to be undergoing surgery and hormonal interventions. So it's because of now these laws and pressures from activist groups and people getting mobbed on social media, and then they go after their family, and, you know, it's just not worth it. So most people I know who are ethical will either leave the field, or they will say, I'm not going to see patients with gender dysphoria because I don't feel right about this not being able to do my job properly. So what you see instead are activists coming in. And I think for some medical professionals, they feel empowered. They get a lot of positive feedback from, you know, pretty much everyone. If you speak out about this, it can be very ugly. So I think it also gives a false sense of reassurance that they're doing the right thing.
Anybody with one good eye can see what's being done to J.K. Rowling for simply stating scientific facts. You mentioned, and I agree with you, conversion therapy for sexual is a waste of time, and we seem to have, I would hope we'd have better things to do with our time than worry about that. But when it comes to gender identity, you mentioned that therapy can be helpful. Does that mean, conversely, that you could conceivably, in an unscrupulous way, theoretically, convince somebody, if you started young enough, that they are a different gender?
I mean, theoretically, you could. At the end of the day, gender is determined by biological influences in the womb. So higher levels of exposure to testosterone are associated with more male typical interests and male gender identity, regardless of whether the baby is male or female. So I suppose if you had, say, a gender typical child, and you, a parent, wanted to mold that child to be gender atypical, they could try to, but at the end of the day, that child is going to be interested in the things that he or she is interested in and pursue whatever he or she wants to in life. And I that's somewhat divorced from the influence of parents and caregivers and society. One body of research that speaks to this is girls with a genetic condition called congenital adrenal hyperplasia. These girls are exposed to higher than usual levels of testosterone in the womb. And when they're born, they gravitate toward male typical toys like trucks, and they are more likely to grow up to be lesbian when they are in adulthood. So I see it from both sides. I see parent, very, very progressive parents who are hoping that their children are going to become gender atypical, and they really want their girls to be male typical, and they want their boys to be more feminine. And I think that's just as potentially harmful as the parents who say, I want my girls to be feminine, I want my boys to be masculine, and that's the end of that. I think at the end of the day, parents should just support their children however they behave, whether they are typical or atypical. That's more important in terms of the development.
No kidding. I just want my kids to be happy, successful, and wildly rich to take care of their father in his old age. That's not too much to ask for. When you set out to write a book, the End of Gender, and you have the career that you have, and this is your field of study, I imagine more so than most people, you had a general sense of where you were going and what you were going to write, and you'd studied the research before you sat down, but you did more when you, in the process. Was there something in the process that you discovered that took you aback, that surprised you, that you as somebody who works in this field said, oh, wow, I didn't know that. It's worse than I thought. It's better than I thought. It's completely different than I thought. Was there anything that shocked you?
It was probably my conversations with detransitioners. I interviewed a number of them for the book, and it's really heartbreaking to me to hear their stories because of the way that they were. I mean, for many of them, they have comorbid mental health issues. Some of them have, you know, depression, anxiety. Some of them have personality disorders. Some of them have substance use issues. And instead of having those issues worked on with a clinician, they're told, okay, this is about your gender. And then they're moved in a different direction. And now they were pushed down this path, but then they're taking testosterone, taking, you know, they're transitioning to male and suddenly realizing this is not helping me. This is not helping me feel better. And then when that happens and they decide to detransition, they're left to their own devices. The medical community doesn't know how to help them and in some ways doesn't prioritize wanting to help them. And then they are also stigmatized and excommunicated from the trans community because that they are now seen as traitors and potentially a threat. And I understand why some trans activists see detransitioners as potentially a threat, because their existence could potentially be used to justify saying no one should be allowed to transition across the board, not even adults. But I think it's really terrible the way these individuals are being treated, because now they have to deal with the ramifications of having undergo these interventions. They've lost their social support, and they're now also being told by many people that they don't even exist.
There was a controversy a few years ago in the UK and Canada about a documentary about somebody who would detransition. They don't want the gender community, transgender community doesn't want to admit that they exist to a certain extent. Isn't that counterproductive? And would not, from a scientific standpoint, shouldn't the scientific community stand up and say, look, it's rare. It's certainly rarer than most things. But to deny that it exists is to, dare I say, deny science.
It's the same theme of people acting, I would say, to some extent cowardly, that they don't want to draw attention to themselves by going against any sort of aspect of trans activism or accepted narratives, because it's going to bring negative attention to them and they will potentially become a target. So as a result, this continues to happen, and these individuals will suffer as a result of that.
Ultimately, what do people need to know about the current situation? Transgender, cisgender, which is a term I'd never heard until like 5 years ago. Suddenly I'm now this thing that sounds ridiculous. What do you want people to know when they read The End of Gender?
That they're not crazy for the way that they feel, number one, because I think a lot of people feel like these ideas don't make sense, but they don't have the resources to fight it. Because most of these studies, I mean, scientific papers are hidden behind a paywall, so they're difficult to get access to. And then on top of it, they tend to be filled with jargon. They tend to be quite long and in some cases dry to read. So with this book, I really tried to make it interesting and fun. It is backed fully by science, and it offers people citations that they can turn to, so that when someone says to them, oh, the quote-unquote newest science backs up whatever insane idea they're saying, that the reader can go to the book and say, okay, well, what about this and what about this? Because of people who reach out to me, and especially parents who would say, so I wrote this book especially to be family-friendly. There's no cursing in it. Any reference to sex is very clinical and anatomical. So I want it to be something that people can potentially give to their kids, or you can listen to the audiobook in the car, because I had so many of my so many people and even my colleagues saying, my kids are being taught this in school and I don't know how to fight it, because I meet with the administration and they say, well, the newest science says this, and I don't have anything to counter that with. So the book will help you in that way.
As we wrap up here, much of what happens in society, what's trendy at the moment, what's popular at the moment, what's whatever it is in the forefront at the moment, there's a pendulum swing back eventually. It never swings all the way back. It never swings back as far as it swung the last time. But what does the swing back look like here? Not of concern for the people who look externally for validation for who they are when the novelty wears off or something new comes along and overtakes it. What does it look like for them? How do they deal with this after seeking seemingly acceptance and celebration, not even acceptance, celebration? What does it look like for these people who have perhaps other issues, deeper issues, when that pendulum swings back?
It's going to be a very unfortunate aftermath, because I think the turning point will be when all of these children who have transitioned start detransitioning in a few years. And that's going to be a point where society can't ignore that this is happening and that this is a mistake right now. And I would like to think that there will be resources available to help these individuals. But I really think until then, it's sad. It's really sad.
It's a weird time to be a kid. It's a weird time to be a parent and to try and navigate all of that. I recommend you pick up a copy of The End of Gender, Debunking Myths About Sex and Identity in Our Society by Dr. Deborah So. Dr. So, thank you so much for your time today, and congratulations and good luck with the book.
Thank you so much, Derek.
So spelled S-O-H. Highly recommend the book. We're going to be hearing about this for a very long time. And you get yourself educated, get your learn on through The End of Gender. You could just search End of Gender in Amazon and it'll probably come up too, or Barnes & Noble, or wherever your fine books are sold. That is nearly all the time we have for today, ladies and gentlemen. But I do have a couple of messages for you before we go. First, again, the Trump campaign's got a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters, so be sure to enter soon, because this is an opportunity you do not want to miss. The offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. So congratulations. You feel like you've already won. All you have to do to win is text my name, Derek, to 88022 for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history, a wearable piece of history. Not many pieces of history are wearable. Again, that's D-E-R-E-K to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. Paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Yes, we need to keep Joe Biden away from the levers of power. We need to keep him away from anything sharp, anything mechanical. We need to keep him away from a lot of things for his own good, as evidenced by his latest screw-up. Every once in a while, if only by accident, a Democrat will tell you the truth of what they really think. And Joe Biden does that more frequently than most. It's always scary. Have a great weekend. If you are a patron at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast, you'll get to hear me for another half an hour or so, however long it takes. It'll be at least a half an hour for me to curse my way through the week that was, because, man, what a week it was. I suspect we'll hear that Joe Biden clip again, along with other Joe Biden clips, as we review the week with obscenities, as many as I can possibly fit into an hour, and let the rage out. You don't want to get it ball up inside of you and become stress. You want to vent. Join me on Saturdays venting at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast, which will be the first time it is available only and exclusively at patreon.com for the patrons there. It's $5 a month at a minimum. That's next to nothing. That's less than a cup of coffee, I think. I don't drink coffee, but I just hear people bitch about the price of coffee. So I imagine it's cheaper than that. Anyway, have a great weekend in any event. We'll be back here on Monday with another exciting episode full of all the insanity that happens between then and now. Have a great one. Thank you.
Unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community.